Monday, January 14th, 2019. The weather is cold, but the news is hot, hot, hot.
It's raining news.
I am Hayes Davenport. I am here with Alyssa Walker and Scott Frazier. Man, whoa, this is so crazy.
How much time do we have? I mean, how many hours can we go?
I'm so excited to talk about this very juicy stuff that that happened this week. But do we want to tell quick stories? Scott, you and I have one that we can share, basically, our LA stories from this week.
Right.
Scott and I both went to vote in the Assembly Democrats election today. Even just saying it, I'm like, this is ridiculous.
What does that even mean? Like, I didn't know about this until recently. So
these are delegates appointed to the California Democrats. The local assembly member gets to pick 7 or 9 or something. Is that right, Scott?
I believe it's 7.
7.
I'm not positive.
Yeah, and then another 7 are voted on, or another 14 or something. This is
14 that you vote on.
Okay, another 14 are voted on to vote to like endorse. Like, you remember earlier this year when Dianne Feinstein didn't get the endorsement of the California Democrats? These are the people that did not endorse her. So I go out to Burbank to the IATSE local 80 branch, the union. The line is around the block. Was it really long when you were there?
It was extraordinarily long.
It was crazy.
We got there right when they had just started letting people go, and you need to go and like, you're allowed to do on the spot registration if you're not a registered Democrat or something like that. But it was like, register, then vote. We got there right when the line started moving, so it was very long.
So this is the big hook of this story. When you're waiting in line, the candidates and all their cronies, whoever wants to, can approach you and talk to you and try, and as you're waiting in this very long line for probably like 20 minutes, can try and like make the case to get you to vote for them. So if you imagine like voting in 2016 and suddenly Gary Johnson is standing right next to you being like, hey, you know, is that who you're going to vote for?
They're handing out like food and shots.
Yeah. Stickers.
It was like being transported back to like, I don't know, the 1860s. Have you guys seen Gangs of New York?
Yes.
It was kind of like that.
Just like that. It was lawless.
I was just staggered. I said on Twitter, and this is true, I've never really thought about the immediacy in terms of the function of electioneering laws before, but now
how urgent it is. Now it's like my main issue, I think.
Now I'm like, wow, this is what it would be like.
At least the line is holy.
Yeah, like why are there not rules against that? I mean, that seems very basic.
Yeah.
50-yard rule or something.
Because this is just a party election, so it is not the party can apparently be run as poorly as it wants to be, and it's not covered by election laws. So so one of the slates, there were two slates. I think this is the case pretty much up and down the state. They varied from place to place, but in each area there were what they call slates of 14 people, 7 self-identified women, and 7 people who are not self-identified women. In up and down the state, you have the progressive slate, self-determined, and then you have the less progressive slate, also self-determined. But they were fairly similar here. I knew people on both and voted for people on both, and I'm confident that they'll do fine at endorsing people to take office or whatever, provided they win. One of the slates was endorsed by Our Revolution, which is run by Nina Turner, and she was there in the line.
Can you believe that?
A lot of people were super excited about it. I was studiously just like in my phone this whole time.
Oh, I could totally see it.
I was also...
Did you have the big headphones on?
Yeah, I did not have the big headphones. These are your headphones.
No, I know, but you also have a pair of big headphones, correct?
No, I don't. Oh, I just have my earbuds.
You should if you don't want people to talk to you in line.
Well,
I
was...
I had earbuds on.
I was busy furiously Googling everybody in the search warrant that we're about to talk about for the next hour.
Oh, yeah,
so
that's right.
I was absorbed. But yeah, Nina Turner was going up and down the line with a bullhorn, talking about the future of the Democratic Party, and her people following her would give a little woo every time she said anything. And I was unhappy with both sides of the issue. And
I almost reprimanded people. I was almost like, stop, this is bad. You stop doing this to me.
Yeah. So that was my experience too. I missed you while I was there, but I feel like pretty much like a host of other people that we have spoken to on this podcast in the past. It was kind of... Laura Friedman was there.
I saw Laura Friedman. Nina Turner was gone by the time I got there, which is like, if you're going to show up for an Assembly Democrats election, you might as well stay the whole time.
Right.
But it sucked. I mean, it was definitely the worst voting experience I've ever had by far. Please tell a story, Alyssa. You have an award that you're getting.
Why, yes. Thank you for bringing that up.
Was that going to be your story?
No, but that's nice of you to say it.
Alyssa's getting...
I didn't just pass him a note. Mention it.
Alyssa's getting an award from Ciclovia.
Where Alyssa is getting awards, and it's not even LA story worthy for her. It's just another day.
AARP. So it's you and like 65 million retired people.
I mean, they're doing the most important transportation work in the city. I'm not even joking. So I'm very honored to get it alongside
them. That's cool.
Yes. So that is February. Oh, man. I should know this.
She's going to her awards calendar.
I mean, like, yeah, where's my, you know, it is awards season. So it's February 10th. And if you go to Ciclovia, you can buy tickets. It's an all ages, like during the day party.
Wow.
For literally all ages, from babies to
retired
octogenarians
persons.
Or non-genarians. And it's going to be really great. So that's a good LA story. That's perfect. Thanks. Oh, and also a promotion for today. If you're hearing this in the morning time, the NPR show 1A is doing a live show from KPCC about the Olympics and development for sports events. So I'll be on live at 2 p.m. and it will air on KPCC locally, and then, you know, you can find it online on 1A.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Those are LA stories. Okay. Let's get into the news of the week. Sorry. Do you guys hear that?
What? Oh.
It's quiet, but it sounds like... Is that music? It's
building.
Too,
it's building.
Too early in the show,
it's
I
building.
Feel like, to be talking about this. But yeah, I think it's... Weezer! Say it ain't so.
Yeah.
My councilman is a bribe taker.
I almost just spit.
Alleged. So, all along in the sordid Councilmember Jose Huizar saga, we've been saying that we were eventually going to find out why he was being investigated by the FBI. For people who don't know, the FBI broke into his office and home, seized documents.
Didn't break in.
Well, I mean,
sounds more dramatic that way.
They weren't invited. He didn't
invite
them.
They were not invited. That is correct.
They brought in thumb drive sniffing dogs. They carried out a lot of boxes, including one that said fundraising, that has made it into every article about this since. And we've been asking, when are we going to find out? Is he ever going to mention why he's being investigated by the FBI? And nobody knew until Twitter user Seamus Hughes, doesn't even live in LA, lives in DC. On like a Saturday at like 6:30 p.m., drops a federal warrant that he found in public court records.
Yep.
This is what he does.
He's been there since November.
He lives inside the court record system, and he found this in there, and it shows what Jose Huizar is being investigated for and more. I need reactions for everything I'm about to say, so please get ready. The warrant said agents were seeking evidence related to an array of potential crimes, including bribery, kickbacks, extortion, and money laundering. Involving
did you run out of reactions?
My jaw's just dropped now. Like you can't even like
involving 13 people, including another councilman, Curran Price, in the 9th district, and an aide to Council President Herb Wesson,
chief of staff
to Herb Wesson. In addition to a lot of Huizar aides, and a member of
a commissioner on the Board of Public Works,
also a deputy in a former deputy in the mayor's office,
who spent a decent amount of time during this investigation period, also running the Department of Building and Safety. So,
surpassed all my expectations for what a total clusterfuck this story was going to be, and I thought it was really, really bad. Let's go through this document and what's interesting about it. So we have a much clearer picture of what the story is with this investigation. It involves money paid to public officials from developers. It seems like it's all around development.
Yeah.
Mostly development from major Chinese and international builders and these big projects that are going up downtown.
I would say, so we still don't necessarily know that it is money to politicians. I think that we still...
I'll take a small leap.
It is an extremely vanishingly small leap of faith at this point. The search warrant, as posted on Twitter last night and picked up by the LA Times, does seem to focus on the sorts of fundraising activities that we've talked about in the past on this show.
Yes.
So payments being made at the behest of politicians to third parties, seems like it is
Bishop
clearly
Salesian High School, right, where they say like they, you know, they'll go to a developer and Huizar will be throwing a fundraiser for his alma mater and be like, hey, throw this school a few $1,000 and you know, like we'll give you a better deal on the development or something. That is a tiny part of this.
This
whole thing. And it's not, when we talk about money going to politicians, this is not campaign finance money. This is personal bank account money, or actually more likely a bank account that is secret and does not have the individual's name on it.
I have to even correct myself, because I think that the fact that let's go through this, because there is so much in here. I think that we risk missing some of this stuff if we don't take it sort of bit by bit. I think,
as
you said, we have a very clear picture now of money going from developers to politicians and their favored interests. And we have that because this search warrant names 13 people. We mentioned a handful of the politicians. It also names specific developers. It calls out foreign investing entities specifically from China that include Shenzhen New World Group, Shenzhen New World Investment, Shenzhen Hazens.
Yeah.
These are major players, particularly in downtown LA. But we have developments that are named specifically the LA Hotel downtown, which was reported by Urbanize LA last year that the Shenzhen New World Group plans to build a 77-story tower there that would be the tallest in the city. The Sheraton Universal Hotel and Universal City is also one of theirs. The Lux Hotel redevelopment, which is a major project that I think was under scrutiny for some time, or a subject of contention, because the Lux Hotel was potentially one that people who are in favor of historic preservation were saying that was a building that should be preserved. There was some back and forth about how to proceed there. These are specific developments and and the related business interests that are being laid out by name in this search warrant.
Do they mention Greenland and Metropolitan as well?
They do. Yeah. They mention Greenland and Oceanwide, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It just says any development projects relating to foreign investors, including but not limited to.
Okay.
So we have that. We have this is a search warrant for, this is separate from the ones that we were talking about earlier that allowed them to go into Huizar's district office or his city hall office, rather, and his home earlier last year.
Right.
This is specifically for the private email address of Ray Chan.
Ray Chan. So this federal warrant was served to Google.
Right.
To allow them to go into his presumably Gmail account.
And presumably without the knowledge of Ray Chan mm-hmm. or any of the named individuals.
And pull out information related to any of these individuals and companies. Let's go through some of these individuals. Isidre Huizar and Salvador Huizar, Jose Huizar's mother and brother. That to me is a very, very bad sign.
That's a very, I think you're right. That's a very clear sign that they're looking
money
for evidence of payments.
Absolutely.
To the politician being funneled to his next of kin, basically.
Yes,
his,
I don't know what else
immediate
that
family
could
members.
Possibly mean.
Right.
We don't have like the details on it, but that is a truly damning inclusion. Also, Sean Cuck, who was Jose Huizar's planning director, and Georgia Sparza, who was Jose Huizar's aide, who now works for Wendy Carrillo. I thought that his name being in there was interesting because he's been quoted in some of these articles about Huizar's fundraising efforts for his wife, Rochelle Huizar,
right.
who extremely notably is not mentioned in this document at
yeah.
all.
Yeah, right. That was interesting.
And they work very, very closely. It's confusing to me that she wasn't mentioned in there. But Esparza has been quoted revealing information about Huizar over the last few months,
right.
about his sort of underhanded fundraising activities for his wife.
Being directed to do potentially illicit things in order to get donations to Bishop Salesian.
Yes.
He has been in the LA Times saying that. We actually found in the aftermath of looking through this search warrant, we actually found another search warrant from February of last year. This was filed on the same day that the FBI also had a search warrant for the email address of Jose Huizar. They had one for George Esparza as well and for another named individual in here that we can't exactly place as of yet. Ricky Zhang. So
yes, the mysterious Ricky Zhang,
right.
the one person that we haven't been able to come up with any information on, and hours of Googling. I will say, so Scott, like you're being modest, like you found,
you did a lot.
In,
yeah.
In the court records.
That's how long the line was for your, voting thing you went to.
Very
today.
Long.
You found the warrant for George Esparza's emails,
right.
And also for Huizar's emails in 2017, correct?
Yeah. So following this, and I see Seamus Hughes has also posted that on Twitter as well. Now the Huizar one, I don't believe that he's posted the George Esparza one, at least as of the time that we're recording this on
yeah.
Sunday evening. But basically following that on Saturday night, I went into a total frenzy.
Yeah.
I completely fell down a black hole where I was.
This does suggest to me that you could have found the original warrant, which would have been great.
But yeah, so the documents are on a system called Pacer, which holds the federal court records.
That's come up on this show before because that's
yes.
The server that the judge accidentally leaked a protected witness's name onto.
Right.
And the LA Times published it and were ordered to remove the article anyway.
For a brief time. Yes.
Yep.
And Pacer charges you a kind of substantial amount to use their service. But there are other websites where you can find the same information. I was able to go to courtlistener.com and go to our central district of California court system here and literally just look for searches related to gmail.com, search warrants related to gmail.com from 2014 onward. And the names George Esparza and Zhang popped right out, as did Jose Huizar's, of course.
How many were there total?
Not very many.
That's wild.
Not very many. Yeah, it was maybe 30 or 40.
Really?
Over the course of the past 4 years. Yeah, so.
That means 30 or 40 Gmail accounts have had warrants issued for them, and that's it? That makes it seem like this must be like a pretty big case.
So let's see. That it means that those are the only ones that are on the court listener. Okay. I don't know that those are the only ones right. that happened. Okay. I don't know how they capture those.
Okay.
But yeah, so we do know that George Esparza was on the radar of the FBI along with at the same exact time that Jose Huizar came onto their radar. Esparza was one of the first people that they were looking at. So I would tend to think that, and especially given the mention of Bishop Salesian prominently in this search warrant, that what he was talking to the LA Times about is probably the exact kind of behavior that they're looking in, looking into. But to continue going through the people that are named in this document, as we mentioned at the top, Curran Price, who also serves, he did serve on planning and land use management with Jose Huizar, who was the chair before getting stripped of his assignments by Herb Wesson.
But he also is the council member that has like basically the rest of downtown.
Yes.
Anything
Staples Center
that that Huizar doesn't have. Yeah. He's
LA
all
Live.
Of LA Live.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Yep, a very development intensive area. Of course, the Reef was another project in his district that there was a considerable amount of back and forth over whether or not that was going to go forward. And some, I think, consternation by people who were advocating for affordable housing there that they were unable to get Curran Price's ear.
Yeah.
But given that we're talking about the Sheraton Universal, we're talking about a project in Universal City, it doesn't seem like this is specifically related to things happening in CD14 or CD9.
It's more about planning and land use.
It seems like it's about the Planning and Land Use Committee itself.
Right.
Now, Herb Wesson is not... Sorry, go ahead.
For people who don't understand, have you guys talked about Plum before? And like, if we say Plum, should we explain like what these committees are?
We've talked about the Plum Committee really only with respect to Jose Huizar being kicked off of it.
Yeah.
I do remember that.
But yes, talk about the Plum Committee.
Well, just that this is, you know, the Planning and Land Use Committee is where you would come to if you were a developer who wanted an exception for, say, height or a number of units or all these other things that go against the code or, you know, are different than what the zoning or code has for those parts of the city. And why it's been such a concern for especially people who don't believe in these larger developments being built in the city, because they say they are maybe only for rich people or they create traffic and all these other things that may or may not be true about different large developments, is that these exceptions are being granted by pretty much by this committee. So you go there and tell them that you want to, I mean, you can correct me, Scott, if you think I'm getting this wrong, but it's like the power that this committee has is quite large to make a developer very happy or say this project needs a lot of change and we need to fix it. So the implications of these huge Chinese, mostly Chinese companies, corporations, megalopolis building, you know, entity. Yeah. I mean, these are building like some of the biggest projects in the city and in the world, which is super interesting. The fact that they would have gotten special permission to do things or they have these deals on the side or whatever, like that is a huge making of the city of LA story because of the power that the Plum Committee holds.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah,
it's absolutely correct. This is an extremely powerful committee. I think that for anybody who has spent much time in or around LA politics, it's very well known that the laws governing what can and can't be built here are extremely Byzantine. Developers can spend years, if not decades. The Metropolis project that
and that's right across the street from LA Live. If, as you're like walking down Figueroa, it's like towering glass, like sheets yep. coming down towards mm-hmm. you. If you just
I used to park there to go to Clippers games when it was an empty lot yeah. like 2 years ago, yeah. it feels
yeah.
like.
Yeah, it went up fast.
The Metropolis project, which is a billion plus dollar development that it was put together by Greenland.
Yep.
Who are named in this search warrant, I think was originally proposed in the 80s. And it changed hands multiple times. But these types of enormous projects can be very hard or very, I guess, easy, depending on the...
How much money you have to...
Depending on the disposition of... you know, candidates to look favorably upon what you're trying to build. That is really, it's hard to take anything else from this search warrant. We have a number of people in planning and land use. We have a number of people in, as we said, the Department of Building and Safety, which is responsible for putting out the types of permits that you would need to actually begin and complete construction
yep.
on a new project. And we also have
code enforcement.
Yeah, the chief of the code enforcement bureau.
It's like the steps to to open a building. Like, it's
like it is a good guide on basically how to be a developer in LA.
Yeah. We have code enforcement. We have public works. It is a step by step it's like a step by step machine, basically, for how you would get through the city's bureaucracy. That is extremely troubling, of course. I think it's really staggering that we're talking about three sitting council members being either directly named in a search warrant, an investigation into corruption, and then and one indirectly through chief of staff, which is as close as you can possibly be to being directly named.
That's I want to pronounce it Darren Williams because that's the Utah Jazz point guard's name, but it could be Duran as well. I don't know.
I don't either.
And then there's one other aspect, so something named in here, which is also kind of troubling, which is HHH. And
yes. So this is something that people have been making like a lot of noise over, the inclusion in this document that Proposition HHH and other campaign fundraising initiatives are part of what's being searched here. Now, you and I, Alyssa and Scott, had sort of different perspectives on what that meant. What did you sort of think it meant?
Well, I was just thinking it was the same kind of thing. Developers would get these great projects, which are almost guaranteed to probably go forward because it's part of our big affordable and homeless housing effort that the city had, you know, is basically holding a race between all the council members to build as many units as they can. You know, this is being pushed by the city. And it's, I guess if you're a developer, these are the kind of projects you'd want to go after because right. you would have some kind of, you know, money guaranteed coming towards you. But then Scott had a different idea about that
yeah.
just based on how the warrant was worded.
I have a nasty habit of reading things completely out of order, but in this case it kind of was helpful because I took that clause completely out of context. And it says all records relating to Salesian High School gala, Proposition HHH, El Grito, and other fundraising expeditions / campaign contributions.
So El Grito is an event that Huizar's office held in Grand Park to celebrate Mexican Independence Day. We've talked about Bishop Salesian High School, which is where Huizar went to high school, and he hosts fundraisers for that school, his alma mater.
Right.
And his wife is a paid fundraiser.
So to me, the connection was clear between that and what we've discussed on previous episodes, what has been discussed in the LA Times, as far as the funneling of money towards specific fundraising campaigns.
Right. So instead of what I definitely suspected was that it implied developers that were going to get HHH contracts would have to put some money in a hollow tree and
right.
Kick it up to the Huizar family. to his mom, you know, email it to his mail it to his mom or whatever.
Stick it in a theater on Broadway, yes. Like bringing back Broadway.
No, no night on Broadway on that list, interestingly, because the B-52s were too sacred to interfere with.
Right. Marriage unscathed.
But it's yes, it seems like what you're suggesting, Scott, is right, which is that they're investigating his fundraising efforts to raise money to get HHH passed. That is campaign stuff. Unlike all the rest of this with the huge developers and the like bribery, extortion and kickbacks and right. stuff.
And that also makes sense. I mean, it's also a good theory. It's this, you know, the same thing. Like a lot of those projects are in his district. Like he would, you know, money would be flowing right. to, you know, he was kind of like the person who was behind a lot of the yes. campaigning for that and things right. like that. So.
And these supportive housing developments are on such a like knife's edge that even the suggestion of a bribe, but a lot of these places would probably just like fold up.
Yeah. I mean,
to start sobbing.
but you, there actually is, so there's an article by Doug Smith at the LA Times from, January 20th of 2017, that specifically touches on this. The headline is developers join the campaign for a quarter cent sales tax to fund homeless services. Uh-huh. So that was specifically about Measure H, but I think that there is a definite connection there in the sense of, we have a lot of developers of market rate real estate. We're getting involved in this campaign funding effort to right. get H and HHH across the finish line. That was what I was thinking yeah. when I read
no, that. I now think that that's
yeah,
right.
I think you might be right on that one too. Because also if it was a plan to like do bribery around HHH, they didn't do a very good job because no. they haven't built enough HHH units yet. So I would be disappointed.
But they did do a good job getting it passed.
Yeah, that's true. It passed handily.
So
as
it
they
makes it seem like that's
say.
Where most
so,
of the money was going.
Okay, I'm with you on that one.
Let's go through a few more names on this list. We've got Raymond Chan, who's the guy whose emails are being searched by the FBI, and he's maybe finding out yesterday. Like, who knows? He worked in building and safety. He was number two at Department of Building and Safety from 2003 to 2014. Then he was the head of the department, and then he worked in the mayor's office. He was a deputy mayor for economic development until 2017. So that does bring it home for Mayor Garcetti, who right. we'll be talking about with respect to this scandal more.
And he was when he was appointed head of DBS, he was appointed by Garcetti as well. So he yep. was a figure that was close to Garcetti throughout this period of time. It's potentially, I mean, this is the thing where even if Garcetti is not directly involved, it is potentially particularly dangerous territory for him
yep.
and for his political ambitions in the future.
I would say Chan is more notable and more powerful as head of building and safety, though, than he is as deputy mayor,
sure.
Which is mostly a symbolic
but those
position.
Are those are both positions that Garcetti appointed him to.
Right. No, I'm just saying like his interest to the feds
yes,
is
yes,
probably as head of building
right.
and safety
yes.
in the same way that Lincoln Lee, the next person listed, was chief of the Code Enforcement Bureau at the same time, by the way, 2015 to 2016. Those are people who would both be heavily involved in getting any development approved, especially these massive ones that we're talking about. Downtown also included Joel Jacinto, a commissioner on the Board of Public Works, and his wife Ave Jacinto. Never want the spouse to be to be listed alongside there. Never looks good. She is an independent contractor, and then we just have a list of the
basically the biggest development
the absolute
companies
richest
working.
Developers.
Yeah, I mean it. I mean this list is like it's you can't even like fathom. And a lot of these companies also a lot of their projects have been sold in the last year in LA too. If you look, like part of Metropolis was sold.
Right.
What was the other one I was thinking of?
Oceanwide?
Yes.
Right across from Staples.
Right. So there's all these, it's kind of like they're flipping projects, flipping towers in downtown, right?
Part of the reason why that's happening is, that the Chinese government has changed
the rules about
Chinese nationals investing money overseas, like, which I think just kind of tanks the prospects for a lot of these buildings that are going up currently, because a lot of them were intended to be places for very wealthy Chinese nationals to stash money in American real estate.
Uh-huh.
Now that's not going to be, I guess, as tax favorable as it was previously.
So they've been unloading them.
Basically, yeah.
Oh, okay. Some of the names, Wei Huang, chairman of Shenzhen New World Group, George Chung, Shenzhen Hazen's real estate group, Fuer Yuan, whose last name is actual money, founded Shenzhen Hazen's real estate group. They're developing the Lux Hotel. Mason C2 works with San Yi U.S. Investment Company. There's a name on there. We're not exactly sure who this is, Yan Yan, but that is the name of someone who now works with Blackstone's real estate team in Asia, and was also the president of Soho China, which is a huge office developer that has been making big investments in the United States. They bought 40% of the GM building in New York. They are making inroads here, but they don't have any specific projects in LA or investments that we know of. So that could also be. Who else did you find that was named Yan Yan?
Just accounting clerk. And apologies to Yan Yan at City of LA if this is not you. That was a name that was shared there. That I found under Transparency California, Transparent California.
And then there's the mysterious Ricky Zhang. We can't find a single thing about him, but he was one of the email addresses. I guess he has a Gmail address.
Yeah.
He has a Gmail address.
That was seized.
Did you email him?
We should email him and ask who he is. by the FBI in 2017, prior to this warrant that was only issued in November.
Yep. So beyond the names, beyond what we've talked about already, what the FBI was looking for, they were looking for specific bank account information. They were looking for any fundraising, those things we mentioned already. They were also looking for any records related to travel to Las Vegas.
Oh, baby.
Flight itineraries, photographs.
Photographs,
anything,
please.
Anything related to, they actually get so far.
It's like
into
the credit sequence of The Hangover.
Information request, quick.
It's like that thing, you know, you never, never ask a question you don't know the answer to, right? Like, all records relating to Southwest Airlines, the Palazzo, Caesar's Palace.
Southwest,
the Wynn, and
this Chinese developer buddy, they had to wait for like boarding group A.
They have the specific locations where the meetings took place. These two cafes, one of which is in K-Town, another is in San Gabriel. And this I thought was particularly interesting. They have a Google document URL in the search warrant, all records pertaining to the Google document publicly available at URL. So I couldn't resist. I had to try it.
It was just deleted. Called bribes.
It was deleted. But then you have to kind of wonder, given the fact that they had already, this is kind of where it gets into the realm of just like pure disbelief that yes, you do have essentially a document that is just detailing all of your illicit transactions, possibly, and that it is something that you are sharing back and forth over Gmail accounts.
Yeah.
The URL, the way that the URL is structured, because it's Google, you can actually tell that it is the shared URL. So if we have the hundreds of emails being seized from Jose Huizar and George Esparza in 2017, it's very likely that they received in one of those records that they took this very same URL now.
Anyone with the link can view.
Right.
Anyone with the link can view. They found what they wanted.
Yeah, that's smart.
Even though Ray Chan or whomever happened to own this Google Doc deleted it, it's quite too late for that. I don't know what else to say. It's definitely too late for that.
You didn't even need the dogs sniffing the hard drive. Just go into your sharing setting.
Right. And that is a good point. I feel like we've come full circle on the thumb drive sniffing dogs, because that is probably something that was referred to in the email chains as well. So
sure.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about fallout from this. We're only recording this on Sunday. We haven't even had a weekday. There's a council meeting today.
Yep.
Monday.
Yep.
What happens, Alyssa? So here's what I've noticed with Huizar for the last few weeks as we predict what's happening. He sits on the council. No one sits within 2 seats of him. No one even wants to
build. Do you think he'll come?
That's a great question. He missed a couple of days after the initial FBI raid.
Yeah, I don't think he'll be there today.
So this might be the sort of built-in.
It's kind of distracting to his coworkers. But will Curran Price be there today?
That is a really great question.
No.
He tends to sleep through these meetings. So it's just a fact. He sleeps through council meetings more than any other council member. I guess it depends on...
He responded to the LA Times journalists, Zanazer Reyes and Ruben, who wrote about this following the breaking news last night. And he said that he knew nothing about it and had not been contacted by the FBI.
Oh, yeah. A lot of people said that they had never been contacted, or some of them didn't comment. But a lot of people that they had reached out to just said, I've never heard anything about this. I've never been contacted by the FBI.
And Huizar said he continues to be focused on the issues that are pertinent to residents of CD4D.
I'm just trying to do my job here.
Not wrong.
I would say that it probably at this point, don't say anything, honestly. If you're
right.
It doesn't really help you to say that you have not been contacted by the FBI. That doesn't necessarily mean anything besides that they haven't gotten to you yet, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I would imagine that Price will be in session tomorrow, because he doesn't seem to feel like...
That would be sort of an admission of something if he didn't
right.
show
right.
up. So I think he probably will show
okay,
up.
Okay, so now Wesson. Let's start from the... Let's go on the other side of the council now.
Right.
So his... chief of staff, but that, I mean, we don't really know. Again, like,
we have no
idea. They just might just have been CC'd.
We have no idea what the specific roles in this as it is shaping up, alleged conspiracy to basically commit bribery and defraud the public. We have no real sense of what the roles are beyond what we can directly gleaned from people's direct involvement in the Plum process. Wesson is not on the Plum committee, so it is a bit it's
strange.
A bit unclear how he fits into all of this. It also is not clear necessarily that Wesson is involved directly.
Yep.
However, wow, what a bad look. You know,
begins his campaign
for supervisorial district
for the county district two, yeah.
Which, I mean, we were just talking about not even last week on Thursday, we were talking about, oh, is he actually thinking about running for mayor?
Right.
This is a very, very troubling sign for him at the outset of what are shaping up to be his next political contests. And I can, I would say that, like, he probably needs to get out in front of this. And I don't feel like, I guess this will be the week where we'll get a sense of what he has to say about Darren Williams, his chief of staff, his current chief of staff.
Speaking of mayors, we'll talk about this a little more, but tomorrow, is the first weekday dealing with, at least two, really three members of the council being implicated in a major bribery scandal, and one of his deputy mayors. and every teacher in the largest school district.
Today. It's Sorry, Monday,
yes,
right?
Yes, today. Our every teacher in the largest school district in the country is going on strike. How, I guess, is it possible that you could launch a presidential campaign in this environment?
What if he had been planning it for Monday this whole time?
Now was the time. He's been saying early 2019 now for a while. Is it dead? Does this kill it?
I think it should.
Well, the teacher strike aside, and not to put it aside, but I think that's a pretty... I mean, we don't even know how long this is going to go or how nasty it's going to get. There is a change.org petition out to get Austin Buehner kicked out, the superintendent, which was a big mayoral pal, you know?
Yep.
So I think already like that is such a bad look.
Yeah.
This putting some people in the office, it just on this investigation is a bad look.
Yep.
And this is only going to unfold. This is now, I mean, basically a new beginning of this story. We're talking about fallout, but like this is now going to.
Well, I think Scott had the best. You had the kind of the best way to look at it, which was framing this around the Olympics, which has been such a heavy push from this office and also so centered around a lot of these issues and especially things like, I mean, I just started going back and thinking like that the money for to build hotels and like development got in downtown, got like all these kickbacks and like, you know, City Hall, like helped them be built and like the city didn't get a lot out of it, like things like that. So that's really bad.
Yeah, I think that I've heard that Garcetti, his camp is basically at this point prepared to announce his decision that was prior to this all.
And it seemed like that decision was to run.
Yes. And I think that they were getting ready to announce a run, you know, either this week, next week, sometime in January, I would imagine that. Especially now that candidates are starting to come out of the woodwork, you don't want to get lost in the thick of it. So, how do you do that? Like you said, Hayes, how do you do that in this environment? This week in particular, you could not possibly have a worse
and probably not next week
launch.
Like probably not even like the week after that. I mean, okay,
the second
I'm
week
just giving
of a,
like
a teacher
some,
strike
yeah,
is probably I mean, worse. But yeah, no, it probably is the worst conceivable climate in which to announce that you are running for the presidency of the United States.
And what's
States.
Amazing too is he has all this additional national press and attention on these issues, which is kind of elevating the teacher strike already to this very big national story framed around this potential run. So this story, which might have been kind of a small LA focused development story, is going to be a very, very big story now.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's going to be huge. And I think that, so I don't know. It seems like, the forces of the universe have more or less conspired against a Garcetti run for president. I don't personally see how you could do it. I mean, you can. You're inviting a whole lot of blowback.
It would involve a certain lack of self-knowledge that has basically like been the signature of the campaign so far.
Yeah, okay.
So, I mean, if any campaign would announce this week it's Garcetti 2020.
Sure. I think it's just amazing because you have Beto came out of nowhere and just completely took his lane out from under him. Then you have the teacher strike. Then you have the like pillars on which he's built his credibility as a presidential candidate have been you know, the fight to end homelessness in LA. HHH is mentioned prominently in an FBI search warrant. the Olympics, and let's see, we have three council members directly or indirectly named in an FBI search warrant. And then we, of course, have our fourth Englander who left to become a sports lobbyist.
That was a great connection, right? So, I mean, now you have to wonder, like, what's he like? I got to get out of here.
You kind of do.
You have to. He's not in any of these documents. But also, I mean, it does kind of cast a pall over that when you're saying like potential widespread corruption on city council.
Yeah.
You have an enormous, famously corrupt organization, the IOC, coming to town. Lots of opportunities for grift when the IOC comes to town, and then all of a sudden, really all of a sudden, one of our council members decides that he wants to leave to become a sports lobbyist. It does kind of raise red flags that I feel like now are on fire at this point.
They're redder. Yeah.
That's, I think you're getting at maybe the biggest fallout of this whole thing, which would be positive in my opinion. Is so much attention drawn to the city council at a time when it looks like we're going to have quite a few empty seats in 2020. And I think there could be some serious house cleaning happening. I have a friend that works in local politics who has always been very pessimistic about the possibility of getting rid of an incumbent, for example. It's incredibly hard to do in L.A., and after this, he texted and said that he thought there could actually be majority women on the council in 2020.
That would be interesting. Coming from a place where when Garcetti was elected in 2013, there were none? Was it one?
Right now there are two.
Right now there are two.
Of 15.
Yeah. Making great strides.
Right. I mean, the house cleaning is definitely in order. It seems like that is, I mean,
this is going to touch everyone.
I don't even understand at this point, given the precision with which the FBI has apparently been proceeding since at least 2017. It seems very unlikely that Huizar can get out of whatever mess he's gotten into. Like, it looks like jail time is in his future.
It definitely does look that way, unless he is currently wearing a wire and flipping so hard. That might be why no one's sitting near him council meetings. He's like getting feedback. He leans up against the mic and it's like,
God.
Nobody wants to touch it. He is radioactive in the council. That very well could
be. It's going to be a great like noir movie when it comes out in a few years, right?
I've also noticed, I think there could be an effect on just general perception about development. I've noticed a lot of people confirming their priors over this.
Yeah, I mean, like what I said before, like the Plum Committee has been like the target of every anti-development battle, saying like these backroom deals have been made, and which
Joe Stewart, who runs the Coalition to Preserve LA, a major anti-development organization that is under the umbrella of Michael Weinstein, was responding to Seamus Hughes, who released this document, and she was like moved to tears basically by her happiness that this had come out. She was like, it's people like you, it's journalists like you.
Total validation.
But
I also see like a lot of commentary, Twitter chat or whatever, just like, oh, of course this is how it works. Like, don't be fooled.
People
like
pretending not to be surprised.
This is how it's always been.
Yeah.
And I think there's something different between getting a few extra luxury units in your density bonus or something. I'm just throwing things out there. You know, I'm throwing a few, I don't know, what do you get? Like some extra, I don't say parking spaces or something, but there's a difference between like greasing the wheels to like get a tall tower to go in downtown and what looks like very major trips to Vegas with the
biggest development in China.
So it's a different thing, and I also don't think it like reflects upon like every building citywide has like been gone through this, you know, process, but where the money is probably in totally. These major projects that have been name checks.
So. And it's all, frankly, the worst projects, the ones that we need the least, exactly like you were saying, Scott, the ones that are just like condos for wealthy Chinese people and to like effectively stash money, investment properties.
Right, yeah. Right.
That you see like aren't super like there are not many buildings like this. I think it is a myth that there are like most of the vacant right. units in the city are like this.
Yeah,
but there are some and they're pretty much all alluded to in this document. So it would be nice if that kind of thing got a little harder to build. We have been talking about this for 56 minutes. It went by in a second.
Yep. I could talk all night.
It went by so fast. We have to talk about the fact that today, Monday, is the first day of a massive strike of all of the teachers in LA Unified. It's gonna rain, which is terrible. It's gonna rain all week. So that's a bummer. There are lots of places to look up where strikes are happening. If you want to grab an umbrella and go march around, there are places to offer food for teachers, all kinds of resources. What I'm curious from you guys is how you think this could possibly be resolved. How, when do you see it going for a long time?
It seems like they're prepared for it to go for quite a while because they've set up like these community center type things and rec centers where you can actually take your kid during the day and yeah. like volunteers of some sort will watch your children, which I don't know if as a parent, I mean, I don't know, maybe if I had an older kid or something like that, but, and then Metro's letting kids ride for free, LADOT is writing, you know, Dash fares for free, things like that. So it seems like they're trying to put at least like infrastructure in place for parents to be able to deal with this for quite a while. That's the fact that they put the city did that, you know, mm-hmm. this was a press release from the mayor's office. So the fact that this isn't going to be in place made me feel like they thought it was going to go on for a while.
Yeah, they're getting ready to sweat the teachers.
Yeah, they're setting up like basically these camps that like, you know, all the parents like to send their kids to when school's out for like a couple weeks in the summer. They're putting those in all the parks and stuff. So that to me made it seem like this was serious.
Right.
I have to say, I mean, everything that we have discussed as it relates to the strike, the teachers are ready to fight this one out. Like
it does seem that way.
There have been a number of attempts to come to some kind of common ground before the strike actually begins. However, the school district has failed to show the union that they have convincingly committed to similar goals to the union. So, having heard a number of union reps speak about this issue, I frankly think that they're right. I think that they're doing the right thing. And the appetite, you can tell that they have the appetite for the fight that they're taking on. I don't know that there is an easy resolution to this because what they want is fundamentally a better and different LAUSD.
Right.
And so we'll see.
And I mentioned earlier there was a change.org petition that went live on Sunday to get Austin Buettner, a superintendent, to resign. And as of now, when we're recording this, 3,700 people have signed it. And that was just in a couple hours.
In a day.
Wow. Yeah.
Less than a day.
So
they've really been good at just getting mobilization for this, like across the board, even like the marches and rallies that have happened leading up to it, they have a lot of numbers behind them and lots of other unions. SEIU has been, they're striking, right? At some schools.
At 10 schools, they're doing a sympathy strike.
Where, yeah.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. I mean, Alyssa, you said that it looks like the district and the city are prepared for this to go a long time. Scott, you said it looks like the teachers are. I totally agree. And it feels like the negotiation is at like a total impasse, seemingly. So I am also settling in for this to go for a while, it seems like. We should talk a little for 1 second about the Newsom budget that we alluded to in our episode on Thursday. We were looking ahead to and some of the housing stuff that he put in it. It's a lot of stuff that we expected. It's about $1.7 billion for affordable housing cash total. That's distributed between $500 million into just cash to cities to combat homelessness. Some of that is awards for cities that build supportive housing. They're quintupling the low-income housing tax credit that was $80 million, and now it's going to $500 million, which is like a really important mechanism to get all kinds of low-income housing financed. They're also putting up $500 million in cash for moderate-income housing production. I thought actually, I forget exactly what the details were, but a lot of times low income refers to like 80% of median income or something like that. But in this case, their measurements for what was low income was like actually very low income people. And I think moderate income was closer to like 60 to 80% of the median or something like that. They also, so the big thing that I think everyone was kind of surprised by is Newsom's willingness, he said, to punish cities for not meeting their goals. That is something we have absolutely never seen
right.
from any governor when it comes to housing. And he said that he would take away their transportation money.
That, along with the stated desire to turn the RENA, the Regional Housing Needs Assessment,
yes.
Allocations into something that would be
less stupid.
Something, right. something that would be
yeah,
based
to review
in,
it, if it'd be like the city of Beverly Hills, for example, like I'm just trying to do the math on that. So they were supposed to build like what, like three units or something.
Their RENA assessment that they have set for how many low income units they need per year is three. And they did mean it last
right.
year.
So that, but then also like not giving them transportation money, they'll be like, well, we don't want that anyway because we don't want the subway. So we want nothing.
I think a lot of cities will just opt out of this entirely, no matter what.
I'm not actually clear what the mechanism is for withholding that funding, if it actually exists right now, if a law would have to be passed in the legislature that would allow them to do that. I don't think it's immediately clear right now how that would work.
Right.
But that is his intention. We should say that all of this is just Newsom's intention. The governor puts forward the bill, the budget, and then it goes to the legislature to actually hammer out
right.
the details of what they want to see in funding. Then the governor comes back in May with the revision, because California is so huge. Our economy is so huge that we do two budgets a year, actually, just to check in on revenue and everything. And then the governor gets the last laugh, basically, in terms of cutting items out of the budget if he so chooses. So this is an extremely long process. However, right. Newsom seems to be indicating that he is going to be more aggressively willing to take on this housing fight than I think we've seen in a long time in California, frankly.
For sure. And I would say, you know, it's not nothing. It's like you're saying, it's an announcement of his intentions, which I think he went farther than he had to, even in terms of money allocation. Sure, I think it was more than people expected. And the fact that there's like an actual threat of punishment for cities, nobody thought that was going to happen. And there's a carrot as well for an extra like bonus fund of like $500 million for people building, for people meeting new RENA goals after that, that whole system is tweaked.
We are like in the honeymoon period, I think, firmly right. at this point.
Sure.
But I think it was remarkable to see the extent to which legislators after the budget announcement were they had very kind things to say in large part Senator Jim Beal was one of the few people out of Marin who was notably perturbed by the
assertion that
he might lose transportation funding if
they don't want more transportation
housing.
Either. I just think
gondola or something.
They have their smart rail up there.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh God, that thing.
But largely, the legislators were very happy about this, and I felt like, you know, the key thing there is that there is an enormous surplus. Like, it's larger than we thought it was. They're estimating now that it's $20 billion instead of $15 billion. So as long as we do that every year,
yeah,
everybody will get along. I don't see any reason to disagree when you have $20 billion surpluses.
Thanks, Jerry.
Exactly.
That's it for this week. We will be back Monday. I can't imagine we won't have to do an emergency podcast on Thursday. But barring that, we will see you next week on LA Podcast. Bye. LA Podcast.